Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Nick Van Eed joins us for a second time on the Celeb Savant podcast. Nick is part of the Grammy-nominated rock band that were formed in England in 1985, namely The Cutting Crew. Literally within months, the band signed with Siren Records or Virgin on the strength of their melody-rich demos alone. The band had numerous singles charting on the UK and Billboard charts, namely the million-selling I Just Died in Your Arms, I've Been in Love Before, One for the Mockingbird, and many more. They continue to have sold-out shows the world over and release successful singles and albums. As we reconnect with Nick, we discuss the Cutting Crew All For You The Virgin Years box set that was released by Cherry Records and what has been happening in the band's world since we last spoke. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Nick Van Eed from the Cutting Crew. How are you doing and where do we find you in the world?
I'm at home in Sussex in England, down near the south coast. We have been battling storms over the last week. We've had some big stuff blowing in. I've been around the garden today, looked at the house, and everything seems to have survived. Back from a very busy last year, you know, over 40 gigs and all kinds of recording sessions and what have. So just a month of nothing for once.
These storms, are they finished or are they still carrying on? Or what's happening there?
We had two back-to-back ones, Isha and Jocelyn. They give them names now if they qualify as a nasty piece.
Yes.
And yeah, up in Scotland where my guitarist, you know, Cutting Crew member Gareth lives, he's had it really bad, storms and all kinds of, you know, bad stuff. But no, we're okay down here. We're a long way south, but it still whips around that corner of England where it can come up the English Channel. So we were lucky this time, yeah.
I wonder how they choose the names. I find that quite humorous.
Yeah, I know it goes alphabetical. So, you know, yeah. You get H, R, Isha and Jocelyn. So the next one will be Kevin or Kim or Karen or something. I wonder if they've ever had a Barrett.
I'm sure not. It's actually quite funny because another artist that, you know, a lot of British people have the name Barrett as a surname. And, you know, my surname, my name is Barrett Edelstein. And the one artist I'm sort of friendly with from the UK on WhatsApp. And for some reason, this person keeps thinking that my first name is Edelstein. So whenever she WhatsApp me, she goes, "Hi, Eddie." So I'm like, "No, it's not Eddie. It's because you guys have Barrett as a surname." So every now and then I'm going, "Hey, Eddie." I'm like, "It's not Eddie." So I just laughed to myself.
I like that.
We chatted at the beginning of last year. So let's dive deep into last year. So I remember, did you have an operation on your knee last year? I think we spoke just before that.
That's right, yeah. I fell and broke my knee. And thankfully, I broke the knee that needed operating on anyway. So that's all been done. And if you can see the video, yeah, it's I'm kicking like a can-can girl. Big success. It's amazing how you get used to 20 years of, you know, pain and because it really was bone on bone. It was very painful the first week of recovery. But after that, good. I swim a lot. I've been a good boy. You know, they say with these things, you can't just have the operation and then do nothing. So you have to do the exercises.
Strengthening.
Swimming is the best thing. So, yeah.
Were you needing the operation and you were just putting it off?
Yeah, absolutely. 20 years. I think about 10 years ago I went and the guy said, if you can hobble around for the next 10 years, I promise you that the, you know, the techniques will get better in 10 years' times. And they have, you know, it's great. And, of course, it sometimes goes off now in the airport, so I feel very important because it's made of titanium.
Yes. That's funny. You said you've been, after the op, you were traveling around the world or traveling and doing shows, just doing tours, and you were in the recording studio. So let's dive into more of that.
So basically, Cutting Crew now is the full 5-piece band. We toured right across Europe, Italy, Switzerland, France, Germany, Netherlands, Belgium. It was really good, good shows. It's a really good band. And then we also have a trio version. So there's me, Gareth, and we bring in a guy called Tom Arnold, who is one of these annoying guys that can play everything. So he plays cajon for percussion, plays keyboards, he sings, he can play accordion. So we pare it down. It's remarkable. If you go onto Facebook, my Facebook page, you'll see some clips. I mean, it doesn't sound like the 5-piece band, but it really rocks. We've done a lot of clever sort of trickery. No tracks, no cheating, but all three of us sing, and I'm playing guitar with a lot of bass on the bass strings, so I'm almost playing like bass rhythm, if you like. And that's a lot of fun because when you have that show, you can do a lot more chat. You know, you can talk about the songs, tell where they came from, and little sort of innuendo, sorry, stories and things. But also, you can put covers in. You know, we play some really nicely chosen covers that fit the show. Tom sings Beatles, "Oh, darling," and he's right up there screaming and screaming. Gareth sings a song called "Girl Crush," yeah, from a band. A girl singer would normally sing it, and then I sing. What do I do? What's my spell? I do the Paul Weller song, "You Do Something to Me." So we squeeze a few in that have relevance, things that mean something to us.
When do you perform with the 5-piece and when do you perform with the 3-piece? What are the differences?
Well, the 5-piece definitely will be in the 1,000-seater places
Okay.
or 1,000-capacity. We've played big stuff with the trio as well, but normally it's more intimate.
Okay.
It's maybe 200, 250. And although we've done some festivals as well, and I've seen us turn up and the roadies and the promoter going, "Oh wow, only 3 of you for 4,000 people," but it works. It really works. And Gareth, is all over it playing his guitar. So yeah, I'm really proud of it. It's a nice sort of shuffle up. Obviously, I have to think the different arrangements on the songs. So in Died in Your Arms, for example, we play it very differently with the trio, of course. So I have to think when I'm playing with a 5-piece, I'm going, "Which version is this?"
And what keeps you going, getting back on that stage after all these years?
Well, it's a privilege. I'm 65 now, and I've been doing it since I was 18 years old. Never stopped. And I've given all my life to music, and without sounding hokey, it's given me everything back. So it's been a nice deal. I think as long as I'm fit and singing, I've always made a promise that the day my voice can't do it, I'll stop. I don't want to do that 2 years too long where people are walking away going, "That wasn't that good." So I'm still singing well, we've got something to say. We play well. New songs as well. Also, I love traveling. I'm one of those guys that I'm never happier than being in a hotel room and getting on a tour bus and all the nonsense that goes on, the bottles of beer and the bottles of Jack Daniels. We still rock and roll.
So when you're traveling now, is it stage off, go travel, stage off, go travel, or do you have a t couple of days or few days in between so you can actually digest, absorb, and see where you're at?
That's a good question. If we can invent it, we do that. I mean, in Germany, the European tour, that was bang, bang, bang. That was hard work. But let's say, for example, we played in Los Angeles last year, and then we got on a cruise boat and sailed down to Mexico and played three shows on the boats with Kim Wilde and Prince's band and all that. But we invented 3 days in LA. So we did the Hollywood Hills and we went back to Barney's Beanery, which is still there. And that was the bar that Kevin and I would go and drink and eat in when we were back in the 80s being big pop stars. And that would be our choice of a hole where we could sit and plan or rest or hide away from from the fans. It sounds a bit like, you know, I'm making it up, but it was. You could get in there. It was kind of a hallowed territory where you could just hide. So yeah, I took the whole band there and showed them pictures on the walls of those days. So that was a nice moment.
I've got a point of discussion. I think we may have discussed this last time. So I'm always that person right in front with jamming, dancing, singing, enjoying the moment. I'll take my phone out for maybe one or two songs, take a couple of clips, a couple of photos, but then I try and put my phone away and just enjoy the rest of the time. I notice the people around me have their cell phones out for 80, 90% of the show, potentially. From the person on the receiving end of that, seeing a bunch of phones compared to faces, do you feel that it's taking away from the energy and experience of those people, or it's just where society is at the moment?
Both, really. I mean, it definitely is the way that people are now, which is a little sad. I find it quite amazing, actually. I watched a guy I know, Rob, really good fan friend of mine, and he stands there with this, you know, rock solid still throughout an entire song, you know, and then he may choose not to do the next song, but he'll send me the video, and you know, it's wonderful. So I'm getting stuff out of it, but I wonder just how much. No, he's not dancing, he's not singing along, which is what I know that everybody else would rather do. For me, you know, my era, obviously we didn't have those kind of phones available. It was just turn it up loud and sing, and of course some of the gigs, people barging into you and knocking over. So I, yeah, it's a new experience, but as I said, I get a lot of good stuff out of it.
You mentioned you performed in the crews and the festivals with various other artists. The difference for you performing at a festival where it's a multitude or a number of different people and headlining or performing your own show, what is the difference?
Oh, absolutely! You know, to do our own show, you can pace the set. You can, as I say, try different songs. You can literally make it up as you go along. You know, if I want to turn to Gareth and say, "Hey, man, you want to sing a song?" and he'll go, "Okay." So you know, you can do that. When you play the festivals, we normally get about half an hour, 35 minutes, sometimes less, and so you're always counting the minutes. There's always some guy on the side looking at his watch, you know.
Yes.
Which is not the most pleasant thing. I mean, my wife works for, I won't name him, but a very, very, very famous 80s pop star. And because he was headlining, by the end of the day, when all the other bands had gone over, just 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 3 minutes,
Yes.
when he got to his show, he had to cut two of his songs. So the headline act has to cut songs. So there's always that jeopardy as well as the show goes on that you're going to get your songs cut. And we've had that before, and that really fucks things up, you know, because you've worked it out that this song comes after that.
Yeah.
So it can get a bit messy. But then the other side of it, at festivals, it's great. You're hanging out with Nick Kershaw and Go West and Carol from Taipei and Paul Young, all my mates, you know. So and the European gigs, bands I've never met before, and you know, they all know who Cutting Crew are, so it's a lovely camaraderie.
Tell us about the new music that you guys are busy recording. Is it going to be a body of a new album?
Absolutely, yeah. This year, I take after March when we finish our last shows that have already been arranged, I'm taking from March to November completely off. I'm going to be doing two things. One is writing and recording the album, and I've got some new guitars I bought, really cheap guitars, but I love, if you look behind me here, there's six or seven guitars. I'm not really a great guitarist, but I love tuning them strangely. So
Okay.
you can pick them up and they just sound, you know, this one's a pretty standard tuning. It's open E. So when you play it open, it is a chord. But
Yeah.
what's good about it is you can sort of. That chord would never be playable on normal tuning, you know. So it
Okay.
takes you into areas. So I love playing around with tuning. And we will record, I would imagine we'll record around about August, September, if everything goes well. I'm looking forward to changing it again, as I always do with Cutting Crew. You know, the last album, I loved it. I had to favorites. It was a kind of a tip of the hat to many of my favorite artists. So it was very varied, you know, a little bit of Otis Redding, a little bit of Jackson Browne, a bit of Warren Zevon. But this one, I think I'm going to bring it back, rein it in a bit. Maybe a bit more prog. Gareth, the guitarist, has been saying to me, prog, prog, prog. So maybe we'll do some 19-minute songs.
For the listeners who do not know, what is prog?
Okay, prog rock, progressive rock. It would be what I grew up on back in the 70s, you know, early Genesis, that kind of thing. So it would be melodic, but instead of it being maybe a four-minute song, it could be go through sections of, you know, the first part, then a theme runs through it, and lyrically it can be a little bit more off the wall, if you like. So it's a challenge, and, you know, it's very easy for me to sit here and say that. I'm a Gemini, remember, Barrett, so I'll probably change my mind to
Barrett. Is it going to be new originals, or is it going to be covers or combination of both?
No covers, no. Okay. I very rarely record covers.
Okay.
So it'll all be new songs. And then the other thing I'm going to do, which is, I don't want this to sound rude about my music to any people who follow Cutting Crew, because it's what makes me, my heart tick, you know, is the band and my music. But I'm going to do something I've never done before, and I'm very excited about it because I can't really be judged on it because, you know, I've never done it before. And that is, I'm writing a book, and it's not a book about me or Cutting Crew or anything. I think that would be far too boring, or maybe too salubrious. So this is a book. It's a fiction book, and it's about a guy from Ireland who gets a bit screwed up when he's a lad. And he goes on this poisoning spree and meets up with a girl, a Japanese girl in Amsterdam. And it's a kind of very dark, very profane, hopefully very funny book that I'm about a quarter of the way through. And when I was a lad, I used to crawl down in the middle of the night. My dad was a builder. He used to get up at 6 in the morning. So when I used to write my songs, I'd creep downstairs and, you know, whisper and play the guitar quietly.
Yep.
So I'm a bit like that again. Now I creep down in the middle of the night to not wake the wife up or the dogs. And I'm writing the book. And it's been a big, big, I love it. I love the challenge. I love using accents and words. But most of all, as I said, I don't care. You know, nobody can really judge me because, you know, I'm not a novelist. You know, so you've got that thing like making your first album.
Yes,
when you're completely unjudged. And I love that feeling.
Was this a new spark of your idea to think, okay, cool, I'm going to write a book? Or is it something that's always been hanging in the background?
No, it's quite new, really. I always write down notes. I don't write a diary or anything, but I sort of scribble down ideas all the time when I'm out, whether they be lyrical ideas or just, you know, life ideas. And the one thing I found when I was out there, I don't want to give too much away about the book, but it was how easy it is to toy with somebody randomly. And that's what the book is about. It's that random ability. And I'll give you an example. It's not in the book, but, you know, when I used to go on holiday to some hotel, there would be a book lending area where you could share your books. You know, if you didn't want to go and buy a new Joan Collins, you could get it from this area in the hotel.
Yeah.
So I remember thinking, I got hold of one, and I could rip out the last 3 pages so they never know how it ended.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Or you could write something in the middle of it, some very dark message. So, but the point is, it's not so much about the message or that, it's the fact that it's random. You don't know who's going to pick up that book.
Yes.
And that's what fascinated me. And that's what fascinates Vincent, the Irishman, when he does his poisoning.
Okay, so now the collaboration with Cherry Records. So this is a release of all the Virgin, re-release of all the Virgin albums onto one box set. So how did this collaboration come to be?
It was their invention, something I've been pushing them or pushing everybody for a long time. But most importantly, it's including Compos Mentis, which was the third album, which was literally killed on the day we delivered it. It's back on the days when EMI bought Virgin, and they just sort of waded in and just killed off hundreds of bands almost overnight. And it just so happened we were like, here's our new record. And they were like, bye. So it sat there for 30 years, nobody's, you can get it. You know, it was printed. They had to print it by contract. So it's out there, but it's very rare. So that's good. I was involved in the artwork. I was involved in the words, the running order. And also I said to them, you know, I've got all kinds of stuff here that nobody's ever heard before from those days. So they've also added on two very rare demos that one's called Open Up Your Windows and one's called Kites. And I know the fans will love that as well.
So it's interesting you mention about the album being killed or because of, so this happens when a record label generally, I'm talking generalization here, is this when a record label takes over or buys out another record label and they perceivably are not interested, I'm not sure if that's the correct word, or they want to clear out or cleanse out or move forward in a fresh space, then it's just the artists that were there was like, sorry for them. Is that my understanding? Is that how things happen?
It really was, yeah. I mean, it happens all the time. You know, you've heard about the flying X-Men got dumped by Sony. So I made that name up. But you lose your contract many times. But this was, in my memory anyway, it was pretty vicious. It was just like a lot of bands all at once. And also what they did was, you know, contractually, so they kept the contract good. They paid the advance. You know, when you deliver a record, they pay you money. And back then, that would have been a lot of money.
Yes.
And I said to them, keep your money. Let me have my record, you know. This has been a year of my life with 12 songs that I've written. And they said, no. So basically, they sit on these things because, you know, I don't care what they think about me saying this, but I think record companies are very scared that an artist will take back the album and then go and get it on a Tom Hanks film the next week. And they're seen to be fools by giving it away. So they always play it very close and very tight. And it just kills a lot of albums. There's lots of great albums out there, I'm sure, that have just been sat on.
So you mean to tell me that the album's completed and never released simply because of political and things that happen in the managerial things of the world?
Yeah, you get a bunch of, you know, a new record company come in and buy another record company, like EMI buying Virgin. This is huge stuff. All of the guys that would be working at EMI, you know, Johnny Peterson, Harry Johnson, they know nothing about Cutting Crew. They didn't sign us. They, moved on. They've probably got 20 of their bands they want to work on. And so you're seen as, you know, a bit of an old dinosaur. And it really hurt me. Not so much like, oh, it hurt because my record didn't come out. But, you know, we sold a lot of records for Virgin. It wasn't Virgin, did it? So you build, you know, you have to get over it. And, it was a very odd time, especially when you've given a year.
Exactly.
A year and a half, really, you know, to it. But anyway, it's going to be out in all its glory. And I always say Broadcast was my album. The Scattering was the band's album. That was much more the band getting involved in the production and writing. And Compos Mentis was definitely Kevin's album. He sort of took the reins and there's lots of pretty weird stuff on there. And you can hear him all over it in the lyrics.
Finally, be out there for the world, for everyone to listen. And any other sneak peeks that you can tell us about the box set?
Well, there's two demos never heard before. One is Open Up Your Windows from the Compos Mentis session. But the other one was a recording when we didn't even know we were Cutting Crew. It was Kevin, me, and Colin, our bass guitarist, who had a 8-track recorder. And it was in my mum's lounge with a drum machine, and it's a cover of Kites, which if you look it up, it's by the Simon Dupre Orchestra, which was just made up stupid name. There wasn't a Simon Dupre, and it certainly wasn't an orchestra. I think they went on to become Gentle Giant, but it's a very eerie kind of, I will fly a yellow paper sun in the sky. And you can hear me kind of finding my voice as Cutting Crew singer, you know, because this is early days. And Kevin with his guitar synthesizer, which nobody had, you know, used much on recordings then. So, yeah, it's a nice gift.
I look forward to it. So we've got that gift at the box set from Cutting Crew out now. And later in the year, you'll be releasing or recording and that coming out later, the new album by Cutting Crew, which could be prog, could be something else. Depends on Nick's mind changing from tomorrow to the next. So we're looking forward to all these different new stuff, old and new, in inverted commas, coming from the band. So Nick, I love this game. I remember I asked you this last time, and we'll see how different it is. I'll have to go back and listen to your previous interview to find out what they were, but I'm sure you remember the game. I know it'll be different to last time, different if I had to ask you in 3 minutes or 3 minutes before. Five songs that you would play by other artists. What would those five songs be and by whom?
Because I've been researching for the new album, I think Genesis, yeah, it was Ripples by Genesis.
Okay. Yep.
A beautiful song. Okay, what else would we do? Patti Smith, Because the Night. I think that would
Yes.
be a good one to get my teeth into. I think maybe an Alanis Morissette song. I think she was one of the major. She changed everything. I personally think she changed everything. She was one of the first artists ever who could play rock music and sing with melody. But she managed to make any word, any line fit into any word. Sometimes it's very much, I have a dog and it sits on the mat. But she would say, I have 15 dogs and they sit on the mat and everything's done. But it was almost like rapping within her tunes. So I adore her. So we've got Alanis, we've got Genesis, we've got Patti Smith. I would sing a Nick Kershaw song from his last album. He's a friend of mine, but he made an album which is just astonishing. There's a song on there called All Around the World. And what he does is he makes puns on traveling all around the world with the names of drinks. So this is a drunk going all around the world.
Oh, wow,
So
super. Yeah.
from tequila to Armagnac,
Okay. Yeah.
that.
Yeah. That's cool.
And one more. If I Fell in Love with You by the Beatles. There you go.
Great mix. Great sum to add to my list. So, Nick, as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Well, it's these Zoom interviews and podcasts and things are so important because, that's something we never had back in the 80s. They are great. You can, especially with somebody like yourself, where it's interesting and personal, you can reach thousands of people. So I am sad at the moment, the way the world is. I think it's a pretty screwed up place. In my 65 years on this planet, I've never known it quite as scary. So I hope we get through it. But next time we talk, big things may have happened. But I send my love to you all and listen out to my band. I'm very proud and very privileged to still be doing it. So I send my love to you all.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.